Welcome to 2-Bit Encryption, the officially unofficial podcast for Mr. Robot on USA. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about the season opener for season four. It's titled 401 Unauthorized. Do you recognize that?
That is an HTML error code.
It sure is. Mm-hmm. It's a technically a status code, but I'll give it to you. I looked up all of the ones in the 4XX block.
There's 403 not found. No, 404 not found.
Not found.
403
yeah.
Redirected?
I think, no, that's 301 is a redirect, a temporary redirect. 30 stuff is like just a bunch of redirects, I think. Yeah, so I looked up all these because people were speculating, rightfully so. Like, what are they going to do for all these episodes with these response codes? Would you like me to run down all 13 of them that could possibly apply?
Sure, yes.
Okay, I'm going to try and do it quick so we don't annoy people. 401 unauthorized, obviously. 402 payment required. 403 forbidden. 404 not found. 405 method not allowed. 406 not acceptable. 407 proxy authentication required. 408 request timeout. 409 conflict. 410 gone. I added the question mark. 411 length required. 412 precondition failed. And 413 used to be called request entity too large. Now it's called payload too large.
Whoa.
What could the payload be?
I don't know.
For the final episode.
I thought there was another one about the server combusting. 420.
God. That's it. Shut it down. We can't beat that joke.
I think it's quite easy. I saw some people discussing like they might actually do the entire season that way, like episode 401, episode 402.
So I think on IMDb the next two are listed as the next two codes.
Yeah.
So they might. And I was wondering when I thought, oh, this is season four, they could do 404,
yeah,
not found. That might be interesting. What are they going to do? But they've never done that in the past. So I was always...
Right. It's always been something techie, but it's like, you know, there's always been different like archival suffixes and different file formats referenced. But I could see, because it does look like there's a little bit of a mystery about whether Angela might be still alive or doing something, and that's like feeding into the, you know, what mysterious White Rose shit's going on, and like 404 not found could maybe reference that. But I don't know, because there's a lot going on. There is a lot going on in this episode, and sure to be going on in this season as a whole. I don't know.
And there's at the beginning of this episode, another thing I wanted to talk about, there's dedication to Steve Golan, who I found out by researching was actually, he's a producer on Mr. Robot and actually Spotlight, which won a Best Picture Oscar in 2016, I think. But he was also the founder and CEO of Anonymous Content LLC, which is the production company that makes Mr. Robot. So, you know, that's kind of a big loss. He died in April of this year. So, yeah, dedicated to Steve Golan. Hopefully, you know, the show will not suffer without him too much. We can talk about the number of viewers that Mr. Robot got.
Not great, Bob.
Yeah. So I got a 1.3 share of the all vital 18 to 49 demographic. Which translates to like 440,000 viewers, which is down from the season three opener, which was like 680. So, you know, lost another third of its viewers.
Not as big as fall off from season two to season three, though.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is the this is crazy popular on Reddit. Like, I've never seen something so far outstrip its audience. Well, I mean, I guess it makes sense that Mr. Robot kind of like fitting Reddit like a glove, but still, like, there's 130,000 active Redditors on that subreddit. So, like,
damn,
a third of the adult population that watches Mr. Robot is also on Reddit talking about it. That's incredible. It's incredible.
I hope we see that many for The Expanse, because
yeah,
that has
it would
a
be
similar
nice.
Audience level. But
it would be nice to see that level of engagement.
And I think it's all like, not all of it, but a good chunk of that is based on the ARG too. Where people just get really into that ARG stuff. And we're not going to go, we never have gone too deep into that stuff here on the podcast, because
we're not,
honestly, it's a full-time job to dig into that stuff. I know there are Discord servers where people are just like hammering on these websites, but we will mention like that those things are out there and sort of where you can find them. Stuff
and as
like
they
that.
Surface information that's interesting, because yeah. like, you know, for example, there is a loony law firm uh-huh. that Jake Busey is affiliated with, and that's a real website you can yep. go to. And I'm sure there's some kind
same
of
same with the bank, the Cypress National.
There's yep. some kind of embedded encrypted image that if you play yeah. it, unlocks iPhone video game that if you get the high score on will unlock a personal message from Sam Esmail.
Mm-hmm. I'm assuming like the username you would use on that is maybe Flomax on like the Cypress website, but I don't, yeah. we can't get into it.
Right.
It's too much.
Right. But someone will crack it by Friday right. and we'll talk about if there's anything interesting that came out of that.
For sure. Okay. Should we get into the episode? Oh, well, what'd you think of it? First of all,
I thought I missed Mr. Robot. There's nothing really on TV like it. Yeah. There's a couple things that just immediately grabbed my attention, like the previously on.
Yep.
How they don't ever stop it. It just smoothly blends into the new information. In fact, I was watching.
Amazing.
I'm like, man, they're really wanting me to pay attention to this Philip Price Angela. Because I just watched this last week, this episode.
Yeah,
like, they really want me to pay attention. Then I'm like, well, but I don't remember them. I don't remember Angela getting up. I don't. Mm. And then I realized what they were doing. They're just like immediately, you know, grounding this in a set and time and reminding us like that there hasn't been a time jump. Now, there is a time jump in this like immediately after this.
Yeah. The next scene jumps 2 months.
Like when we go from, you know, White Rose's back of her head over to New York City, we essentially jump forward several months to all the way yeah. to January. But I'm sorry, all the way to December.
Okay,
December
yeah.
22nd, to be precise. Uh-huh. And I thought that was amazing.
Sam Esmail's, man, he's so good at these cinematic flourishes.
Yeah.
He just keeps continuing to up the ante, doing things I've never seen done on television. You look at something like Homeland, he did that with kind of the credit sequence mm-hmm. in that, mm-hmm. the end credits, where he would just kind of let the camera roll.
Yeah.
And yeah, you would see like a character pacing and just like it gave it a moment to sink in. And then in this, I felt like I was already in the story before I was actually in the story.
Yeah.
With this recap just going seamlessly into the show was great.
Yeah. And there's a lot of things like that we'll be talking about. I thought there's a few things that little bit either heavy-handed or unbelievable. I mean, I've always been bothered by like the financial details or the actual real-world mm-hmm. details of financial collapse, and I think it's I didn't think they did a great job of showing the world being financially devastated, and it's somewhat unbelievable to me that the world can be undevastated that quickly. And I thought mm-hmm. maybe they were going to go for like, well, the 1% has recovered. I mean, that's one of the common criticisms of the recovery since 2008 is that like a lot of brokers and wealthy people and people with investment and retirement accounts have come off pretty well, but people that don't have that, the lower classes, the people at the on the fringe of the middle class that are kind of hanging on have been left behind. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the income or the wealth gap, it's just gotten worse and worse in the last 12 years. So I thought they were going to suggest that, but when you look at the world, it seems like it's just literally gone back to pre-5-9.
Except now there's a layer of eCoin on top, right?
And
just enriching the rich even further.
And people lionizing the wrong people, like you know, Wellick. Uh-huh. The fact that he is being hailed as a hero, the fact that he's being hailed by a hero from the what was it, the Treasury Department, who was the Secretary of the Treasury or whatever, who we saw, like, you know, how they're the U.S. government's all complicit with this too. It's just, it feels very like Elliot says, like everything's just gotten worse. Like White Rose getting away with this has just emboldened her, and it's just going to keep happening and keep happening. I felt like they should have shown, like, you know, a little bit of underclass resentment. Mm-hmm. That I funny enough, the Joker film that just came out last week that we reviewed does very, very well of showing a world where like the garbage collectors are on strike and there's like everybody's just kind of on edge and it's harder and harder to, but people like the Waynes are doing well. Something that Mr. Robot's always struggled with, I think they continue to struggle with, but I made my peace with it. I'm going to, again, top dab. That's just a one thing that drives me crazy, and I'm going to not harp on it all season long.
Okay. Yeah, are you ready to get into the episode itself?
Why not?
Okay, we're going to do a full recap on this one, like we always do.
All right.
Because I feel like Mr. Robot deserves it. There's so many little things in
each
scene.
It would honestly
be
harder to do because, like, everything is just so wild and out there and interconnected.
Yeah. Speaking of being interconnected, yeah, we roll right from previously on to this episode. Angela continues on from where she left off last season, says she wants to expose White Rose, and she's going to do it with or without Philip's help. Philip pleads with her, begs her to move on in a little flourish that I really liked. Mm-hmm. And then she refuses, and the DA kills her.
I like that Dark Army, she goes a step attorney. Past him, and we don't see what she sees. Yeah. I mean, I figured what it was, yeah. But like, yeah, the Dark Army just waiting, and yep. It turns out he's wearing a wire. Mm-hmm. Fuck, what an intense scene. And the show, yeah. You know, Philip Price was such a powerful person in season one to the extent that I wasn't even sure who was top dog between him and White Rose. Mm-hmm. And now White Rose's victory is just so complete.
Yeah.
Like she's murdered his child. She recruited his child and murdered his child.
And you have this once powerful man saying the only way to survive this is to beg.
Yeah.
For forgiveness. Yeah. Beg for a seat at the table.
Uh-huh. And like, you know, she even put at the end where he's like just so impotently angry. It's like, you know, if you need to vent your rage on me, I'll take it. We both know I'm very good at it. And like that's also a threat. Because look at what your acting out has got you so far. Mm-hmm. Do you want more of this? Do you want more temporary, you know, feeling good about yourself and then finding out how deep your shithole can go? Or do you want to just finally, you take the advice you gave to your daughter, you dumbass.
Yeah.
And he's just utterly defeated, utterly defeated.
Yeah. And this is a huge deal. I mean, I don't know how many people thought Angela was going to be killed this early in the season, especially.
But there was a lot of, just because how little she was in the trailer, but yeah. I still think there might be, I do think that Angela is dead. Yeah. I don't think there's going to be some kind of complicated sci-fi thing that brings her back or some kind of like robot thing, but clearly with Darlene, mm-hmm. her drug habit, her guilt, the things that she is feeling right now, there is something happening. There's some kind of delusion. Yeah. And I think that it wouldn't be surprised if there's some flashbacks or if they just like really more fully explore that. I think maybe Angela will be her Mr. Robot.
But I do think it's the right move to kill Angela here. And I read an interview with Sam Esmail who was talking about this. And he said, essentially, we really didn't want to kill Angela. But we saw no way forward for this character who was so set on her actions, her next move. We saw no way that White Rose would let her live.
Yeah.
And just be out there potentially finding out about her secrets, about her project. There was just no possible way. So they decided to do this. And I think it's smart too from the perspective of Angela as a character doesn't have any power here. And this last season is all about, you know, what power can you bring to the table to fight against White Rose? I didn't see Angela's role in this whole struggle.
Yeah, and Sam Esmail has made some comments last season and since then about kind of poo-pooing actual time travel.
Yeah.
Like and I think that killing a true believer is kind of also on a meta way telling the fans, like, hey, make peace with the fact that you know, Angela's mom's not coming back. That this isn't going to be some kind of magic thing. That, you know, at best, what White Rose is talking about hacking time is like a poetic way of describing. I mean, she's doing something big, clearly.
Yeah.
That's going to consolidate her power in the world. But, and you know, just even in the preview episode, I was still hopeful that there was something, you know, particle acceleratory going on that's going to be kind of like more or less Back to the Future. And I just, that since that and this episode, I feel like, nah, it's...
They did show it in the previously on, though. They show that facility again.
Yeah.
So...
I mean, like, at this point, I'd rather... Because I was just... I think I said something about, like, if it's not something a little science fiction-y, I'll be disappointed. And yeah. I was thinking... of that sense that I'm like, that's kind of setting the show up for failure. And do I really think that what I really want is some kind of really awesomely satisfying, like as soon as you hear her plan and what's going to do, you should be like, Oh my God,
yeah.
That's incredible. And that could be time travel, but it also could be some kind of global way to hack Google search results to only return information that she approves of. Okay. You know, so like think of how much control you could have over the world's financial markets if you could do that. If you could bury any story, you could promote any point of view, you could you could besmirch any reputation or build anyone up to be the CEO. Like if you could do that, if you could steer human development in that kind of way, or it could be like
it could be something where they're she's hacking the markets and Wall Street with like some new form of computing to get to hack the time it takes to input like a trade or something, right? Like it could be that simple and sort of weirdly mundane.
Or like there's this the Asimov idea of in the Foundation on an Empire, where you've got this guy who develops this branch of science that allows you to predict on a macro level human behavior with enough computing power.
Right.
That is like, you know, if it turns out that like, you know, at a macro level, if you look at us as in millions and billions instead of as individually, that we all kind of behave some kind of emergent behavior. And if someone could crack that, look, my God, the things you could do in the stock market, things you could do in the worldwide political stage would be essentially mind control magic, brainwashing. But it would all be, you know, statistical analysis, essentially. So it could be something like that. I mean, and I'd rather be shocked and surprised at some kind of Doctor Who shit that comes out of nowhere than to be expecting it and then be disappointed at a, you know, just a sophisticated hack of worldwide data, you know?
Yeah, and I like the route that a lot of people are thinking where, you know, White Rose is a true believer in the concept that she's pursuing, but in the end it turns out it's just not possible.
Yeah.
It was a pipe dream.
That's another one that like she might be a true believer in the Doctor Who stuff, but it's just because she's delusional and she's gotten so powerful.
And
so
many other people that she's convinced are also, you know, I guess sad enough, you know, to believe in this, to buy into the hope.
Yeah.
Of her promises.
Yeah. And there's a little bit, I don't know if you how much of the research you got to do, but there's a few hints of that in this episode itself, kind of buried below the surface. So we'll talk about.
Yep. So then we go to, we go to a phone call between White Rose and Philip. Philip curses her for killing his daughter. And then we cut over to White Rose, whose new assistant tells her Elliot's scheme for the Congo shipment is working. And they should have this all figured out, all done in 2 months.
Just in time for the holidays.
Right. And White Rose hopes that Elliot enjoys his last Christmas because they're keeping him on a short leash and they're sending him a reminder about what's at stake here and what they can do. And, you know, he's basically on a ticking clock at this point.
I love the framing of her body in that dress in front of that horizon and just how like majestic but isolated she appeared. And I love the like buzz over her head or over the ocean to New York City. I thought that's all great. And then I love like, you know, because I'm a sucker for Christmas, as we talked about in the season preview, but doing that right into the little drummer boy with Rockefeller Plaza and it's full glory. It's such a great way to flash forward in time.
Yeah.
Why did White Rose get rid of Grant and just bring back female Grant 2.0?
I think it's because Grant's problem was... So Grant didn't get killed because he didn't trust Elliot. Because White Rose clearly doesn't trust Elliot. Like, White Rose needs Elliot at this point, but it's going to kill him anyway. My read on Grant getting killed is that he sort of overstepped the line when he didn't let Elliot... He was about to not let Elliot do the Congo deal, right? Like, he couldn't get done the thing that White Rose wanted him to get done. To bring everything over from the Congo, and Elliot was offering a solution and he was going to throw that away. And so that's why Grant got killed.
I mean, it could be and just a timing thing. Like, Grant has been saying this from the jump, and White Rose knows that if she had killed him, like every single time that Grant asked it, that her project wouldn't have worked.
Yeah.
And now you've got Grant 2.0 saying this, but he is at the end of his useful. He has a you know, like this feels like the final step, like piece in her puzzle.
Yeah, for
and
sure.
Once it's done, that she wouldn't possibly need Mr. Robot or Mr. Alderson. So
yeah,
it does track. I think so. I just want to talk about it. Also, did you see some sharp-eyed people online pointed out that in Elliot's Red Wheelbarrow journal that he was keeping in season two that you could actually buy as like a supplemental feature, he talks about Leon meeting several times with a cute, nerdy Asian girl in prison, and that he was always cagey about his relationship with her. Hmm. I think that you could describe Grant 2.0 as a cute, nerdy Asian girl.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if... I mean... Clearly, it's not going to hinge on this journal that probably 1% of the Mr. Robot audience actually bought.
Yeah.
But a cool detail, if true. Before we continue with the episode, I want to do some housekeeping here for baldmove.com. Of course, Rick and Morty, we're talking about season 3 every Tuesday. This week, we're talking the Whirly Dirly Conspiracy and how to wreck the galactic economy with the Wall Street Journal's Paul Venya. Cecily and I continue to be covering American Horror Story Season 9, 1984. We have those episodes each Friday. Jim and I are covering the final season of The Deuce on HBO, with each episode released on the corresponding Wednesdays. We're in the middle of spooky October, which means Cecily and I are doing the Cinematic Spooktacular Part 3, The Search for Spook. New episodes of that dropping on October 10th, 20th, and the 30th. All Hallows Eve for your maximum spooky enjoyment. We have a ton of bald movies coming out. Last week we discussed The Joker. Next week we'll be talking El Camino, the Breaking Bad movie premiering on Netflix, as well as Zombieland 2 : Double Tap. Finally, don't forget, for club members, we have the Fabulous Lunch with Jim and Aaron every Friday. It's the only show on the internet where Jim says
lunchtime.
So be excited. And that's what's happening this week at baldmove.com.
All right, so then we go over to a law office Christmas party. It's Lomax and Looney Law. There's a letter that comes in for Freddie, looks like the owner of the company, with a DVD and a cell phone in it. And it's a video of him getting off to a young girl, telling him that she loves him.
Mm-hmm.
A call comes in after he watches this on the cell phone. It's from Mr. Robot, blackmails him to copy his email inbox to a thumb drive with all the sensitive client information and bring it to him. And I'm going to kind of stop there because this scene goes on for a very long time in its entirety.
Yeah.
Okay. So what I'm thinking, I've got a scene that I've written and it's got a pedophile in it and I need to cast an actor. First you go with Gary.
Go with Gary Busey. Turns out...
Gary says he's like putting lug nuts on his cat's house or something. Uh-huh. And you say, okay, Gary, maybe not today.
Uh-huh.
You know anybody else?
I think Jake's in the basement. I want to see what he's doing. and then you try out Jake Busey.
Yeah, it's perfect.
Last scene as a sleazy reporter in Hawkins, Indiana on Stranger Things. That's all I can say without spoiling it. That's the thing I was thinking, because we talked about this, like anytime you see like a really ugly person, it's cast because they're really ugly, or a really fat person, it's cast because they're really fat and dumpy or whatever. It's like the times 10, if you're being cast as a pedophile Wolf of Wall Street type, like does that keep you up at night ever?
It's got to.
You just bring a certain plausibility to the role, Jake.
Yeah.
You know?
I couldn't tell you. I couldn't tell you exactly what it is about you, but you got it. You got it, kid.
Yeah. I noticed one of the funny things when I was looking at the Lomax Looney law firm is that like they include free ice cream with consultations for you and your loved ones.
Jesus Christ.
You're literally operating like a pedophile ice cream truck candy wagon out of your goddamn law firm.
Yeah.
You're talking about
the website. So there is a Lomax and Looney Law website. It's www.lomax-looneylaw.com.
Mm-hmm. Looney and Looney Tunes.
And that's one of those, one of the little content boxes on the website says that.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't find anything useful there. I kind of went through, I combed through the website, looked through the code, didn't find anything super useful. I'm hoping
Did you see Reddit the email you get back if you send him an email?
Yeah, yeah.
It's essentially, it says if you send an email to his email address, you get an automated response back saying the partner you're trying to reach has taken an unexpected leave of absence. Mm-hmm. And then it ends with a quote, I guess it's from Nikola Tesla, that says, "The opinion of the world does not affect me. I have placed as a real values in my life what follows when I am dead," mm-hmm. which is ominous in terms of just essentially anyone on the show.
Yeah, absolutely.
As a point of view.
And probably, you know, near and dear to Freddie's heart in this very moment.
Yeah.
What will his family think when he's dead? He's very concerned about this email not getting to his wife and kids.
It's a nice return to form because the first time we meet Elliot, he's extorting a child predator.
Yeah.
So yeah, he it's there's a lot of return to season one, like the whole hello friend, mm-hmm. Being the intro to our experience with the season, or the Mr. Robot, to, you know, Sam Esmail himself saying goodbye friend at the end of the episode. Mm-hmm. Lots of nice callbacks.
Yeah, and I was thinking about in this next part of the scene where Mr. Robot's sort of directing Freddy through this drop, the distinction between Mr. Robot and Elliot and how they're going to be using that this season. And there are several moments in this episode where they kind of lay that out a little bit.
Yeah, I love it.
Mr. Robot is definitely the more rational of the two, the less emotional of the two, even though you see Elliot sort of objecting to that idea, right? Like, mm-hmm. you know, we shouldn't feel guilty about Angela, all these things. But clearly he does.
Yeah.
And Mr. Robot is doing all the rational things. Let's not move too quickly here because we could get caught. And
he's
lo
more
and behold,
cautious
they get caught.
Mr. Robot's always been kind of the revolutionary crazy person.
Yeah,
in
sort of a role reversal.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And then also he seems to be the more fatherly of the two, especially when it comes to Darlene, like, which makes a lot of sense given his character. Mm-hmm. He cares about... you know, how Darlene's feeling, whereas Elliot just says she basically needs to fucking deal with it and not feel guilty about it and move on. But yeah, we'll get to that stuff as we get to it. So Mr. Robot directs Freddy through the drop with the DA on his tail. He directs him onto a train where they meet, mm-hmm. and Elliot examines Freddy's inbox and traces White Rose's wire transfers back to a Cyprus National Bank. And Freddy offers to connect him with a guy named John Garson. He doesn't have the address, so he has to go back to his office to get it, but then Elliot spots more DA on their tail because of a Bluetooth badge that Freddy's wearing, and they take off before the DA can find him. And then Elliot calls Freddy again outside the train station, and Freddy realizes it was never Elliot's intention to protect him from the DA, and
or
in
even
fact,
if it
he
was,
can't.
He couldn't.
Yeah. And so he blows his own head off.
I liked the mention of Cyprus National Bank because Cyprus is a country that came up prominently in like the Panama Papers as setting up a lot of these shell companies that are used by corporations to dodge their tax obligations to their native lands and also for criminals to launder money. And sometimes they're one and the same. And that's like a real, like I actually did a search for Cyprus as like, cause you can act, there's actually a web portals where you can go and like look at for different names and addresses and stuff within the Panama Papers. And it'll tell you all results. I just put in Cyprus and it like just returned hundreds and hundreds of results. Yeah. So they're definitely one of those countries where kind of like at the nexus of that and like tying that real world fact, mm-hmm. that like people are actually stealing from your country. And if you're listening in any kind of English speaking part of the world or any kind of Western world, like it just applies to you. There are corporations stealing money out of us, the citizens' hands, and out of the government coffers. And they're doing it all through these, like, they're clearly illegal ways, but they're doing it properly. So people are getting away with it. And of course, it's probably a lot of people listening to this podcast don't even know what the fuck the Panama Papers are.
Yeah.
And it should have been a real explosive generational scandal, but it's just already been swept under the rug because so much other crazy shit's happening.
Yeah. And there is a Cyprus National Bank website set up by NBC Universal if you want to go check that out. I did not write down the URL for that. You might have to do some searching around on Reddit because I did a Google search trying to find it, and Turns out there are too many real Cypress banks to actually find that on Google.
Yeah, I found it and was fucking around trying to figure out the ARG and wound up setting up three shell corporations. One in Greece, one in the Netherlands, and one in Switzerland. And
really? You didn't set one up on in Costa Rica on Isla Nublar?
Yeah, I should have.
Because I don't know if you knew, if you saw this, but I freeze-framed a lot of these emails and stuff and documents. And apparently, Cyprus, Zhejiang is running all of the funds through a company called InGen Network, which is hilarious because BD Wong, obviously, famously in Jurassic Park, is one of the scientists. And the shell company they set up is a Costa Rican company, and it's based out of the province of Isla Nublar. And so there are three PDF files that he kind of opens up, which have like wire transfers, and they're all dated 6/11/93, 5/19/97, and 6/16/01, which are the years that the first three Jurassic Park movies came out.
Oh my God.
Which is hilarious.
White Rose, the absolute mad lady, is going, her actual plot is going to hack time by bringing dinosaurs back from the Paleolithic era.
Welcome to Jurassic Park, friend.
Yes. Yes. I mean, that's just canon now, I think.
I think so. Yeah, it's good. I wanted to talk about the first part of this scene with the Dark Army on Freddy's tail and Mr. Robot kind of directing him through the drop. That's really cool to me because we see Mr. Robot sort of as a proxy for Elliot sitting there looking through the security cameras. And I thought that was pretty brilliant.
It's a great use. And like what you're saying about the framing of those characters, I love then they this happens several times and I want to call some of them out, but like the way they use the visualization of Mr. Robot, like he is the eyes and ears of Elliot in this bank.
Yeah.
Or I'm sorry, in the train terminal. Yeah. I really like what they're doing with that. And also, I feel like this season's showing Elliot a little bit more willing to be messy. Like I kept on thinking that busker who got those wadded bills dropped in his guitar case. Mm-hmm. It takes the Dark Army a while to get to the subway. I bet they're just beating the shit. They might have killed that dude already. Tortured him, drug him into bed.
Oh, God. I hadn't even thought of that.
I mean, do you think they're going to go away if he just says, what the fuck are you doing, man? I'm just playing my guitar. Like, there's nothing he can say to get him out of that situation.
Yeah, you're right.
And, like, Elliot, there's a couple things where he says, like, later on when, you know, Mr. Robot's trying to appeal to him and he's like, you know, he doesn't feel sorry for anyone that gets mixed up on this because they all deserve it.
Yeah.
And like, it'd be very easy to justify all to everyone in the nation because you could make an argument that we're all complicit in certain things and certain societal systems that are killing people and impoverishing people.
Yeah, especially a guy like Freddy, right? I mean, he's looking the other way. He's not doing his job.
Yeah. But in previous seasons, I think Elliot would be very careful getting like some dude on the street, just using some dude as camouflage to throw the Dark Army off his tail. And now he's just using people that way. Mm-hmm. Scary.
Yeah, it is. I do wonder why, being that there are two of these Dark Army guys, one of them doesn't check that money and the other continues to follow Freddy. But
those buskers, man, they get wild and crazy. You don't bust a busker with that backup.
All right. That's my philosophy in life. It's hilarious too when Freddy shows up in this train car, there's a poster for a television show called Shift Plus Control.
Yeah.
That's made by NBC and it's, what was it? It's a guy in a Mr. Robot mask sitting on the edge of a building hacking.
It's like a lurid Mr. Robot.
Yeah.
Like a sexed up, sexy.
Right. Mainstreamized version of.
Must-see Thursday nights.
Yeah. That was hilarious.
Shift Control.
There's also an email address in there for riseup.net, which is a real website that provides communication tools for what they call, quote unquote, liberatory social change. So, I don't know. Check that out if you're interested. But we're moving on to Tyrell hating his life as the CTO of E-Corp.
Does not seem like a happy man.
No, not at all. His PA sort of runs down his schedule for the day. He tries to push it to the next day. The next day is full, too, and she just congratulates him and tells him that she considers him a hero for, you know, everything, his role in all this, in the decryption of their files.
It's interesting to see him juxtaposed with Dom.
Yeah.
Because they're just both very much like the same species of trapped animal in the situation that they don't see a way out of.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird to me because Tyrell has already lost everything, right?
Uh-huh.
Where's the incentive for Tyrell? I understand the incentive for Dom, I guess, but we don't quite understand it yet.
Yeah, and I was gonna say,
we know that he still wants to fight back, but...
I thought that there was some leverage that they might have still had on him.
I mean, his wife and... His wife's dead. His kid's in a foster home.
Is that it?
Maybe
though?
He could get the kid back.
Right. Like
maybe that's
not,
his hope.
The kid's not dead. The kid's not out of pocket yet. Mm-hmm. I think that's and he's very devoted to his child. I think that's what it is.
Okay, that would make sense. So that's a quick scene, and then we move over to Dom. Like you said, also miserable and very paranoid. She's holed up in her mother's house, and somebody comes in. And she stalks through the house with her gun and nearly shoots the guy that her mom hired to renovate the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
You think that's what he's really there for?
I mean, you want to say that Dom's paranoid and then, you know, Janice shows up.
Right.
Clearly, this could be someone the White Rose put up to this, but like, how would you ever know? I think it's interesting that in between Dom and the plumber is a giant, literally framed White Rose, implying that like she is over everything. She's everywhere. She's always listening. She's always watching. She's always got you right where she wants you. So it's like, it doesn't even matter whether the plumber is real or not. It's real to Dom because she's like writing down everyone's license plate number and. There's that, you know, like when she sees at the end of the episode, there's like all these, you know, you start paying attention to white unmarked boxes on the street, you see them everywhere, which is probably why they're used for this kind of stuff. But yeah, she's just really, really illustrates the idea that she's in bad shape. And her mom is so, I mean, maybe she's trying to be upbeat and positive to kind of like, you know, not feed into Dom's depression and all that. But like it. Man, she's way off in left field.
I wonder what Dom has told her mom.
I mean,
because
just,
obviously she hasn't told her about the Dark Army and stuff. She can't.
Right.
But what does her mom think is Dom's issue right now?
I mean, she probably knows about the attempted attack on her life in China. She probably knows that her boss was murdered in the line of duty. So it's like, you don't have to understand much more than that to believe why a person would be
and attacked
catatonic.
Her like that. I don't think he was lying when he said there are cameras all over the garage. So like that footage has come, you know, to the attention of the authorities.
Yeah.
She could tell her about that.
Yeah.
She was kidnapped. That kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But it does make sense that she would go to her mom's house. I mean, she wants to be alone. She wants to be away from people. And that's the only person she can trust.
I have to ask you a question as a resident Italian.
Okay.
What the fuck is mac and gravy?
It's literally pasta with red sauce on it. Like the meat sauce, the red sauce is called gravy in a lot of Italian homes.
They don't just call it spaghetti and meat sauce?
No.
Mac and gravy. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
It's very confusing if you don't know that gravy is like that red sauce.
Because I was thinking like, is this some kind of poutine bullshit
right,
where
Italian
it's like mac
poutine.
And cheese with like just gravy over it or what?
Nah.
But and the other thing I wanted to point out is that there's a wine bottle from 2017 in this shot.
I saw that.
And of course, people were like really excited because like, oh, man, maybe that does imply
some kind of time travel.
But Sam Esmail just said, no, it was our Starbucks cup moment.
Yeah.
Which if you don't know what he's referring to, Game of Thrones had a pretty infamous fuck up where right at Queen Daenerys's table, there was a styrofoam Starbucks cup very front and center.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know,
production
just,
mistake.
Why you're freezing and going through frame by frame, or you're trying to analysis why a date is one date off. Always keep in mind that even the really careful, high budget, thoughtful people can fuck up.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's something to that one day off thing.
Because
happens consistently over and over and over in places that it shouldn't if people are paying attention.
Right. But just because that is true
doesn't mean the wine bottle stuff.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
I believe him, frankly, when he says it was our mistake.
Yeah. I don't want to believe that he's the type of person that will lie. And that's where I'm almost like, when I started reading some of those interviews where he poo-pooed time travel, I'm like, boy, if it's just straight up time travel, I'll never trust another fucking thing he says.
Yeah.
Coming out of his mouth.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
All right, move on to Elliot / Mr. Robot looking through John Garson's life online, trying to find his connection, where he might live, things like that. With White Rose's project nearing shipment, Elliot's becoming very impatient, and Mr. Robot tries to slow him down, say, don't make this personal, let's take our time. But Elliot is absolutely making it personal. He knows they're on a ticking clock, that White Rose is going to kill him in the next week or so, and he wants that retribution that Angela couldn't get from Philip. So Elliot says his only focus is taking down White Rose. And then Darlene texts Elliot with some info about Angela.
Did you notice that they're operating out of the old all-safe security offices?
I did.
Offices?
I love that. Yeah. This is where it all began, right?
Again, go back into season one. He's spending all of his time throwing himself into his job, but it's a completely different one now. And so much has changed. Like so many, you know, Gabriel being dead.
And I assume that's only possible because... with the economy crashing, nobody has moved into this office.
Probably, yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. He's gonna have to move out soon.
It's a nice touch. I really liked it. And yeah, just his whole analysis of that. You know, someone's got to do this because people are already forgetting. People are exhausted. Yeah. It's kind of like, you know, the show acknowledging why we all kind of put up with more shit than we should, because how the fuck do you care about everything that you need to care about on a day to day basis?
I'm looking forward to when Elliot and Dom hook back up to fight White Rose, because he needs to get his mind map game.
I think he's going to need everybody. I think we're going to have to get the Wellick back, Dom, Mr. Robot. Yeah. It's going to take a small village of committed people. And I don't think Darlene doesn't seem like she's going to be any help this season. Jesus.
No, unless she can get her mind right.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Darlene seems freaked out. She says she thinks she saw Angela. Elliot dismisses the info and tells Darlene that Angela's dead and she shouldn't feel guilty because it wasn't their fault. And it's revealed that White Rose sent a picture of Angela with her brains blown out to Elliot, but he hasn't shown it to Darlene because it would break her heart. And they kind of refocus on John Garson.
Yeah, there's an almost subliminal flash of that photo of Angela getting her brains blown out.
Freeze framed it. Mm-hmm. It wasn't particularly gruesome.
Nah.
Just small hole, little pool of blood.
Uh-huh. But so, pretty conclusive proof of death. I'm imagining that's what Grant 2.0 was talking about, sending a reminder. Mm-hmm. That's what they sent to let him know.
Yep, for sure.
There's also an interesting thing. She asked where Flipper is, which, if we recall, Flipper is the dog that he stole from one of his therapist boyfriends who was abusing him. And then when the cops took him in season two, they grabbed the dog and treated it as recovered property, gave it back to the guy. And then last season, the guy dropped it off and said that she's sick and dying and I can't afford the vet bills. So he's act cagey about it. I don't know if he's genuinely forgotten about Flipper, because he's going in this like manic mode about the White Rose project, or if mm-hmm. Flipper is dead, or if we're going to find anything out about that. There's also other vague references to like Angela taking care of Elliot's fish.
Mm-hmm. Which now I guess is at Philip's house. And
right. There's so I don't know how much this stuff is important, or if it's just important to show that like Elliot has not even remembered about any of this stuff, or is completely forgotten to the exclusion of the other things that he's doing.
Gotcha. Yeah, and they have this argument about, you know, whether or not they should feel guilty and who feels guilty and
whether Angela's alive or whether she's dead. Yeah. I love that moment where Darlene says, "I saw Angela on the street," and like Elliot makes this kind of like, "I can't fucking deal with this now" face, and smoothly Mr. Robot comes in off left screen, and it's just showing the personas like ceding control and taking control, and like just it's much more of a ballet than it was in previous seasons.
And then
I just loved it.
And how during the fourth wall break that we'll get to here in a second, Mr. Robot is telling us like he's compartmentalizing, which means he's using me to deal with Darlene
and
because
us.
He can't think about it, and us as It's really good stuff.
Yeah.
So let's get there. Fourth wall break. Mr. Robot's telling us that Elliot's compartmentalizing the pain of Angela's death and White Rose's victory. And he's just shutting down. And he asks us to be Elliot's friend when the cold, brutal reality of our existence closes in on him. And he uses, you know, the Christmas metaphor here. And kind of all this is happening as we look at carolers, and Elliot and Mr. Robot are headed over to this E-Corp building where they think John Garson is.
Mm-hmm.
And once they get there, they show up with the delivery. He's let up, the doors open, and Elliot lets himself in. He finds no signs of life, and then they get locked inside. Apparently Freddy set him up, and some guys show up and force Elliot out of the building.
Boy, that is a sparse few words to describe so many things happening. So they find that Garson is in an E-Corp building, which kind of immediately raises Mr. Robot's hackles. And it's a very weird scene because you got the doorman eating a bowl of Fruity Pebbles.
Mm-hmm.
You got this man speaking in some kind of Polynesian language, but it turns out it's Samoan.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you saw this, but the actor that plays this guy showed up in Reddit.
Yeah.
And his name is Kelemete Misapika.
Huh.
I hope I got that right.
Okay.
But they gave him the script in English, and then he just live translated into his mother tongue. But he said the translation of what he said, that my character is speaking to my beloved grandmother. He's speaking about his beloved grandmother and how she took his cousins and him when they were children, like the Pied Piper story, to a magical place at the farthest tip of their island.
Jurassic Park, anyone?
And that if he has faith that the machine works, that he'll see his grandma again.
Yeah.
Implying that he is an acolyte of White Rose as well, and just another layer of the Angela fantasy delusion is how she maintains control of a lot of her people. Probably why so many of them are willing to commit suicide rather than be taken alive. Because like, what is it? If they can, she can just be brought, if we can just be brought back when she achieves her objective. It's a very, I mean, it's a cult. It's a techno cult she's running, to Dark Army.
Yeah, for sure.
I also love the ticking sound that's kind of associated with White Rose that gets louder and louder right before Elliot knocks on the door.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like it's a little bit clunky here. All the signs that this apartment is a honey trap, like the dust, the fact that the picture frames are empty, that there's price tags on all the stuff, the fact that, you know, obviously nobody's there. And then they find out that the door's locked behind them and there's no signal. And then Elliot makes a beeline to a bookshelf, grabs the first thing he sees. It turns out it's Jean-Paul Sartre's No Exit play. And he sees that there's a Jean, and then there's the Garson as a character, and he's like, we've been had. I'm like, what the fuck, man?
I like this a lot. Because I think, okay, so from what I was able to glean off of internet research, because I haven't read the No Exit, it is about three people trapped in a room together and essentially creating their own hell just by their presence, right? And if you look at it and you say, okay, we are trapped in a room here, it's not just Elliot, it's not just Mr. Robot, it's also us.
Mm-hmm.
They're your three people. And we're kind of all figuring this out at the same time, right? Like, we figured out several pieces of the puzzle when we see this frame that has stock photo in it. We're like, oh boy, something is up here. Nobody's here. And then Mr. Robot's looking around the room going, oh shit, we're locked in here. Elliot gets the no exit thing. And by that time, everybody has figured it out and he kind of already knew anyway. I kind of think it works, but I'm not familiar enough with No Exit to really understand it.
Yeah, so No Exit keeps coming up. Like, I feel like I've researched this a bunch because I'm pretty sure it's referenced in, I think, season two of Fargo. I think it's been referenced in, it got referenced in Mad Men. Like, it's one of those kind of, like, important works that people, is it like 1984? Mm-hmm. You know, it's like if you never read 1984, by the time you're 30, 40 years old, you're going to know what 1984 is about just because it's a constant cultural touchstone. And the other, so you laid out kind of like the points for it. There's also an interpretation that's kind of neat because, like, this is essentially a metaphor for the afterlife. And that at the end of the episode when Elliot's dying, it literally comes true with his personifications of a mother, father, and his younger self arguing about what's happening to him.
Right.
So, yeah, these people being, you know, it's also, if you've heard the quote, hell is other people, that's from this play.
And I think that would be a hell for him specifically because he didn't fix the problem, right? He didn't get a chance. He's dying now. He's going to forever live with that.
Yeah.
The people he's hurt and he can't make it right.
Yeah. And the Wikipedia description said that it's about Sartre's ideas about the perpetual ontological struggle of being caused by trying to see oneself as an object from the view of another's consciousness, which is pretty heady stuff with the Mr. Robot concept of multiple personalities, fraction. Yeah. So if you want to go into the Angela date off host theory, I think later on it kind of speaks to that.
Man, I didn't have time to jump into that whole thing.
Well, let's wait because someone asked us about it in the feedback. Let's just wait to talk about it there because it's one of those things where I kind of dismissed as kooky in previous seasons, but you know, there might be some there.
Yeah, that's the one off kind of stuff, but
yeah.
I didn't have time to get my head around that. It is interesting to me, you know, I guess another point toward Elliot being sloppy is he fell for a fucking honeypot that I think Mr. Robot knew was a honeypot. He was just compartmentalizing, didn't give a shit.
Yeah.
And now he's off on this White Rose thing and gets caught and killed.
And that's the thing is, like, even though Elliot's a very smart person, he's not neurotypical. Like, he doesn't think and act and process information the way the average person does. So, like, I guess I'm willing to give the show a little bit of leeway of,
well, they want
Elliot
us to think he's
falling for obvious traps because he's just very single-minded and focused about it. And he just, you know, plus also, I think the reality is the second they walked in the door and the door shut, it was already too late.
Yeah.
You know,
but he's also under extreme time pressure, right? Like, they thought the Freddy thing was going to lead to more information than they got out of him. And now,
but
they
have
clues, but they got to follow up fast.
I felt like Elliot fucked up his whole deal with Freddy, too, because, like, if he was a little bit more empathetic and understood how people thought, like, telling him the truth about all the situation he's in and what he's there, like, he should have been like, yeah, I'm just trying to rip off one of your clients.
Yeah.
And this is just a money thing, and as soon as they're done, we're done. But
and
I mean,
the cops are following you, right?
I guess, like, once the Dark Army shows up, it's like, yeah, you could say that these are FBI investigators or something, but, like, just he's not... On his best day, Elliot struggles with those human interaction finer points, and he's not having anywhere near a sequence of his best days. So that's just part of his weakness. Like, you know, Superman's got kryptonite, Elliot's got human interaction and depression and mental illness to struggle with.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's move on to Dom, her mom, and a woman named Janice having what I thought was Christmas dinner. I think this is just prior to Christmas dinner.
Oh, they do set the way we know it's December 22nd is the security cam footage of Elliot getting drug out to the sound of "Don't Worry, Be Happy."
Yeah, which I've had stuck in my head all day.
Yeah, and I loved the juxtaposition of it. Yeah. And the date says 12/22/2015, and it's either right at 4 o'clock or 4:30. It's very hard to tell a zero from a three with that, like, blurry digital font display.
Did it say what day of the week it was? That's what everybody wants to know.
I don't think they've established it yet. No.
Okay. So after dinner, Dom apologizes to Janice for her mother trying to set them up. And Janice reveals that she knows quite a bit more about Dom's life than she really should, specifically about a meeting that she really needs to attend to help clean up Santiago's mess, lest something very bad happen to her mother. I think this is a demonstration of just how easy it is for the Dark Army to get inside her life if they need to.
Yeah, and it's chilling because, number one, I guess I didn't expect it. I thought this was just like a slice of Dom's life of like how hard it is for her. And, you know, then when it turns like, because she was so paranoid before and she'd kind of relaxed and I'd kind of relaxed. And, you know, this person does not look like the type of person that Dark... The Dark Army would use, but then
yeah,
who
when
does?
They send goons, they're almost always Chinese for one.
Yeah,
and they've never sent someone quite like this.
But you could also say the same thing about Irving,
yeah.
From the
piece of work.
From the season before. It's like it's not like used car salesman, mm-hmm. kind of like this dumpy librarian looking woman, like. That, and when she says like, oh, you got to get up early for that meeting at Santiago, you've been dragging it out and it's starting to raise suspicion. Like, I wonder if Dom thought like she could maybe run out the clock. And here's like, you know,
just fail to cooperate in a sort of benign way.
You gotta, and it also puts all Santiago's bullshit last season into focus too. It's like, you know, maybe. You know what? I don't know what the play is, because really, like, you know, it's reminded me a lot of like when we watched Narcos and just how Escobar had that whole country by the short curlies. Because if it the first people to be got against him get shot and killed, like it literally takes many, 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 many people all coming forward against the threat of getting shot. Like it's a miracle that corruption at that level gets ever subverted or thwarted.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a testament to the human spirit that, you know, inevitably. Evil and malignance and corruption get rooted out, like, or it seems like that's like the long arc of human history. But it just shows, like, you know, what do you do? What the fuck do you do?
And I have no idea how she's going to, I guess, do what I expect of this season, which is to come back together with Elliot and start working against White Rose, because she's under such surveillance.
It's
got
to be up to Elliot, because Elliot's the only one that has the skill set to do that kind of.
Yeah.
You know, finessing of the situation, and he's got it all. He's got the computer hacking. He's got the people hacking. He could probably make that happen.
Yeah.
And I
hope so.
I think he will. I think he will.
All right. We go to Darlene, who's living in Angela's apartment. Or I don't know if she's living there, but she's certainly there throwing a party.
She's raging there.
She is. A couple of guests go in Angela's room and start. What the fuck? Rummaging through her shit?
Treating like a
talking
fucking...
Talking about how fucking
Kmart
mental
going
she
out of
must
business.
Be.
Yeah, or yeah. I think they're also like thinking of stealing some of her clothes.
God.
Taking liberties.
Darlene, I mean, I'm sure you've heard this before, probably from your parents, but get better friends.
Yeah, upgrade
Jesus
your friends.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
So she shuts down the party and breaks down crying in Angela's bed.
What'd you make of the flat earth discussion? Was that just
jab at like the conspiracy, like the theorists on Reddit, like poking and prodding every little thing and reading too much into things?
Could be. It could just be a sign of the fictitious times we live in, like the fact that like fucking flat earth. Like, I first became aware of that like when I first got on the internet, and there was several Usenet groups dedicated to like exploring this. And when I looked at it, I thought it was all in good fun. Like this Flat Earth Society, like this was just people being eccentric and being kind of harmless, kind of like the Church's Sub Genus or like any of these kind of internet subversive things. And like, I'll be damned if time and time again, you see something started ironically that ends up being that ends up being adopted non-ironically the longer it goes on. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's also a reference to that kind of phenomenon.
Yeah. Yeah. I find it funny that this one girl hides in the closet. Like one of them gets pulled out by her hair and thrown down the hall. And the other one is kind of takes that opportunity to get in the closet away from this crazy Darlene.
Yeah. You Mary Poppins whore. What is that? I'm familiar with Mary Poppins. I could even like imagine what a Mary Poppins whore would look like. I just think it's a very funny insult. I just can't quite picture. I wish I completely understood where Darlene
to
is coming
be fair,
from.
She is extremely high. She's just taking drugs that she doesn't even know the name of. She's done several lines of coke.
Right. She's supremely fucked up.
She might literally be seeing Mary Poppins in her head.
Yeah, that's true. It's true. There's dancing penguins. Uh-huh. There's Dick Van Dyke just shot out of a chimney. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, who knows?
All right, and then we go to the final scene of these guys who kidnapped Elliot, taking him to his apartment, shooting him up with a lethal dose of what I think is heroin as he lashes out at White Rose, telling them that the Cypress info will all go public if he dies, which... I mean, how many times can you fall back on, you know, I've got the kill switch set, and if you kill me, this info is going out.
It might always be true.
Right. It's just like, at some point, okay. Well, yeah, I guess nobody can ever do anything because something bad will happen if they do it.
Right. I mean, find whatever fucking shell account that's hosted in Thailand that he's using and through the 17 proxies he's no doubt tunneling through and scrub it. Until then, it's going to always work.
Yeah.
You know, it's like asking how many times can you threaten to kill someone's parents before they just said, you know what? Fuck it. Kill them. Like, it's answer is infinity. That's the whole deal with blackmail. Like, it always is going to work. Until you can eliminate the leverage the person has on you.
Yeah, I guess when we're talking about, you know, fictional works, I start to go, is this a crutch they're just leaning on because they can't think of anything better? Or
the question is he bluffing?
That's a good question. I think yes.
We had a whistleblower leak all this information out to the press, and no one gave a shit.
Right.
Like, that's something that, like, I 2015, that's about when the Panama Papers came out. I mean, that's the funny thing about this is, like, this being stuck in 2015, like, the world's moved on, and it's moved on in ways that have informed what goes on in Mr. Robot. And it's, like, entirely possible that Elliot could have all this stuff rigged to blow, and then no one would give a shit because it's Christmas and we're buying our discounted stocking stuffers with eCoin. And thank God we're not having to pay $75 for a rack of ribs at Red Wheelbarrow anymore.
Yeah, I think that's one of the time pressures on Elliot here is getting more information out there, getting this taken care of before the public just doesn't give a shit about anything anymore. Because like he says, they're already forgetting about 5-9. They're already forgetting about the bombings of E-Corp. Like,
Well, no, it's not just that, like, that. It's also the opposite can be true, where it's like sometimes the public hears so much about a certain thing that's fucked up that people are like, oh, God, this again? Mm-hmm. So what? Oh, what's different? Like,
but I think in the context of this episode, I doubt Elliot has this kill switch set up. I think...
It does feel like a bluff.
Yeah, because... He's so sloppy in this episode, and he's so singularly focused on getting back at White Rose. I don't think he's thought this entirely through. Yeah. I don't think he has these safeties in place.
Yeah. It's funny, though, because, like, back-to-back, like, on the Deuce, there was another character, like, trying to talk his way out of certain death, and it's, like, beat for beat, they go through the same, like, try to threaten, then cajole, bargain, then beg, then... like, they go, there's got to be someone's done this, like, 5 stages of begging for your life.
Yeah.
You know, like, try this, and if that doesn't work, try this, and if that doesn't work, then try that, and then blam, you're dead.
Yeah, so they leave him for dead, and he sees his family talking about how they're all going to go away, and they didn't think it was going to be like this. And then we have a flashback to all of the, I think they're all good moments. There were a lot of flashes here, but they're all sweet moments between him, his family, Angela, everything that was good in his life.
Or people, like, if they're not friends and family, they're people that tried to help him, like Gloria, his therapist. They did. They were all happy memories. And I, as I was watching this, I remember in the preseason coverage how some people said that, like, Elliot takes a back seat, and I'm like, this, am I watching them kill the main character off?
Yeah.
And, like, this is going to become, like, Dom's story and Tyrell's story and Darlene's story and because I kept on thinking that Darlene is very season one Elliot. And like her being kind of like overwhelmed and emotional and like fucked
and
up on drugs all the time.
Somebody who isn't there.
And yes, starting to see things that aren't there. And I'm like, oh, that would be interesting. And I was trying to like talk myself into that possibility because like at first I thought, well, he's going to do something with the phone to call Darlene with his last. But that seemed to be failing. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, holy shit.
It seemed doomed from the moment he tried it, right? Just his ability was fading so quickly.
You're not
going
to be able to do that.
No. And so we cut to credits with him dead on the floor.
And it cuts to credits, and I'm like, wow. What?
But then it cuts right back.
Yeah.
And the same guys come back in, and they wake Elliot up with a nasal spray, and this time Philip is present.
Yeah.
What's going on here?
The best idea I saw was that this is Philip beginning his epic revenge against White Rose.
Okay.
That he wanted to see Elliot committed in the same way his daughter was. Like, she went out saying, I don't give a shit. I don't care who it hurts, even if it kills me. I'm going to take White Rose down. And, like, those were the exact same things Elliot was saying. Like, are you... Like, even against certain death, are you going to waver? Are you going to punk out? And once he's been tested... then he can be used. Now,
how
that's not satisfying to me because I don't want to see Elliot as a pawn of Philip Price to get revenge on White Rose. Mm-hmm. But I do like that it's a complication.
I'm trying to remember how aware is Philip of Elliot's involvement with the entire scheme? Because I know there's a scene where he meets Elliot in Tyrell's house and he talks about, you know, Tyrell being installed as CTO as simply a puppet position. Like,
I think he
did
knows.
Did he know really who Elliot was? Did he know that he was involved with White Rose's plans?
I'm pretty sure, if not in season one, then season two for sure.
Because I like the test, I don't know, a test? And how do you pass the test? By getting shot full of drugs? And
so you're not going to ever say, hey, I'll work, you know, like I'll work with her, or I'll do that, or, you know, I don't know. That's the only thing I can think of. Like, else, why would you do that?
Well, I thought when he started speaking to White Rose, maybe that's what made Philip take notice, because these are clearly, I don't think these are White Rose's guys, right?
No.
This is Philip's honeypot. Mm-hmm. For anybody who ever found Cyprus National Bank, ooh, where they're doing all of the transactions through, I think Philip set this all up. This whole
E-Corp building, which we associate as being owned by White Rose, but it's most directly held by E-Corp, who, you know, Philip's was a big part of that.
And, you know, he's part of the financial system. He probably had the hookups through the Cyprus guys to get all this shit transferred. I'm thinking that this is Philip's honeypot, not White Rose's, because why would
that dude in the lobby, the Samoan guy, was definitely babbling about White Rose shit. So, like, maybe he was able to get there before the Dark Army types got there, or he knew that.
But what power at this point would Philip have in White Rose's organization? Like, wouldn't he be the puppet? Like,
yes, but I think he has enough resource that he might be able to manage a hack to get into this, like, honeypot, because it's not like White Rose is looking for Elliot to try this, right? And
sure.
So that's the only thing I can think of, because, like, you know, that guy's what he's saying there on the phone was White Rose nonsense, you know.
Yeah,
but we're not supposed to
but
know.
Maybe
I mean,
it's White Rose's guy guarding his honeypot, like,
right.
Yeah, we're not supposed to know. We're supposed to be doing exactly what we're doing, which is guessing wildly.
I saw some out there shit like, it's going to turn out that Elliot actually did die, and this is like the whole season's going to be the last vestiges of consciousness. There's like a theory that he's actually in a fishbowl type of environment, and some kind of artificial, kind of like what they did with the prison, only on a larger scale in season two, which wasn't my favorite thing they tried to do. Like, I don't know. What's a test? But is this Philip Price's version of like the White Rose computer test that he put Angela through? Like, I don't know what it tells him. I don't know what he gets out of it. I will probably appreciate it in the weeks to come, but I have no idea.
Okay. Yeah, we'll find out more next episode, because that's the end of it. Sam Esmail looks into the camera and says goodbye, friend, and then, you know, he wakes back up.
Yeah, if you didn't know that the needle man was Sam Esmail.
Yeah. Who's the creator of the show?
We talked about this pre-cast. Only because I recognize Sam Esmail, because I've seen him so much, it did, like, I was really engrossed in the episode and seeing his face. Just because I know him, just because I know he's a showrunner, just because I know, like, you know, the kind of shit he likes to get up to as far as fucking with us, like, I didn't like it. It brought me, it immediately just, like, had flashing red neon signs, you know, this is stage. Same thing when Quentin Tarantino, like, drags himself onto his own movies, like, you're not a great actor.
Yeah.
This is, I don't begrudge you, because, like, whatever, it's your show, but, like, for me personally, now, I wonder if, like, if you're just a person watching at home and this is just some creepy dude staring at you, that it doesn't bother you, but knowing he self-inserted himself did bother me in the same way. Like,
I mean, he says two words, like, I'm not
not even that. Like, if Vince Gilligan had been like a waiter serving Walter White bacon in a Denny's, it would have bothered me the same way. It's like, I'm watching a show and I'm engrossed with it and I'm forgetting that this
just
is
takes you out of it.
Yeah, it just yanked me out of it, reminded me I'm watching something fake.
Okay. That's fair.
But yeah, it's like, you know, I'm not saying that this is an authoritative opinion, but
yeah. Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
We've got lots of ongoing coverage this week, from book versus show comparisons for Hot D to the latest very special episode of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? But there are a couple of main events this week you need to know about.
Firstly, we've got a brand new Commission podcast out this Tuesday covering The Raid 2, sometimes subtitled Retaliation. If you're a fan of martial arts films, this is one you don't want to miss. Iko Uwais is a rising star in the action movie world, and it's easy to see why. Join us on Tuesday as we dive into the bigger, badder sequel to The Raid, try and figure out which is better.
Then on Thursday, we're covering the season finale of Hulu's excellent period drama, Shogun. We've been waiting all season to see what Toranaga Sama's plan is, or if he even has one. It all comes down to this, and we couldn't be more excited. Join us on Thursday for what's sure to be an epic Shogun season finale podcast, and to find out if we plan to cover any related materials.
You find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
Shall we do the thing we do where we look up the mailbag and see what kind of crazy stuff people are getting up to?
Yeah, let's do it.
Robot@baldmove.com is how you get into the aforementioned crazy fishbowl that is our mailbag. Okay. Travis starts out with, "Hey fellas, welcome back to the Sam Esmail Sadist Variety Hour." Thanks, it's good to be back. "Word on the street is everybody loved this episode, and I really appreciated a lot of it, but I know I'm in the minority, but Angela was my favorite character, and her opening scene death, while well done, seemed like a load blown too soon. Pardon my phrasing. Her last scene with Elliot was in 309 when she's being loopy in his apartment, which feels kind of wrong in retrospect. Within 5 minutes of learning about Price's parentage, she's killed and kind of fridged. More on that later. What's the point of her learning that? The last season and the fact that there's now no chance of the original trio, Elliot, Angela, and Darlene working together is disappointing to me. She seemed like she had so much more story potential, at least more for Darlene and Tyrell. Is it me? But does the biggest terrorist attack in U.S. history in 306 seem like an afterthought now? Anyway, these are my criticisms. Darlene with the ballet shoes was very effective. The Sam and Emmy cameos were fun. Also, if you didn't notice, Emmy Rossum, who is Sam Esmail's wife, was one of the carolers.
Yeah.
It's a hard one to say. Carolers. Jake Busey's sequence is well executed. And for a second thought, I thought we were getting scenes from the finale due to Esmail's fuckery. I mean, we got Angela and Elliot kind of dying in the same episode. What do you guys think?
So I think the Angela's death serves a purpose more for Philip than it does for, obviously, Angela, because she's gone. But, you know, we needed to know that that was his daughter because that provides motivation for him.
Right.
So we need to understand that going forward. And then how do you do that? How do you reveal that information without Angela? It'd be harder.
I don't know that Angela was always intended to die. Like, this could be a scheduling thing. This could be...
Well, that's what Esmail said. He said, like, we wrote ourselves into a corner at the end of this last season.
Yeah.
And we just couldn't figure out how to get out of it reasonably.
It's also entirely possible that this is a deliberate misdirection. Killing her in the very first minutes of the show and concealing her in the trailer could be a very long con to show that something else is happening. Now, I think the way they showed her being shot and the picture that Elliot got as confirmation, like, would imply that there's almost something mystical happening. But I don't know, because I do clearly remember a scene in season two where it felt like there was a power surge and time rolled backwards.
Right.
And it's entirely possible that was some kind of drugged up illusion or delusion that Angela's having. But Angela at that point in time wasn't like prone to being drugged up. And she's always seemed like she's had a fairly stable, an emotional and mental bearing up until, you know, some of the season three stuff. I don't know, because, like, I know you always hated Angela, but I always thought she was an interesting character. I really liked how they were playing with her, you know, all white Angela Angel versus Darlene D for Devil, wearing devil horns and wearing red and black. Like, there's like the two sides of trying to appeal to Elliot's better or worser angels. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was a vital part of the story. So it could be that, like, they're priming Angela to be join the Mr. Robot delusion in Elliot's head, and the fact that Darlene's kind of seeing her too, because all the drugs could be a way for Elliot to that kind of sneak into his mind. I don't know, because I thought she's a great actor. I thought she brought a lot to the show, and it would make just as much sense for them to be doing all this, so it's a genuine surprise when she comes back and plays a bigger part. I just don't think she's going to play a big part as a living, breathing person.
Okay. Yeah, I'm with you on that last part, yeah. Certainly.
And as far as the other stuff you said, I think that's a plain reading, but that's unfortunate because... I want to read Haley, whose email says, I'm going to make this short. Can you guys talk about how Angela marks the third character to be fridged in the show? The same phrase that Travis used. Shayla, Joanna, now Angela. I'm sure I'm missing another one, too. Have you heard of this term, fridged?
It sounds familiar, but I don't know what it means.
It's named kind of like the same way Jump the Shark is named after Fonzie, literally jumping a shark, which was sort of seen as like the high water mark of Happy Days, where it just all sucked from there.
Yeah.
Fridged is named after an episode or a comic book issue of The Green Lantern, where he comes home to find either his wife or his lover murdered and literally shoved in his refrigerator. And it's a trope named because it's a woman whose death is used only to further the ambitions, revenge, pathos of the male character, because they've killed his girl, they've killed his daughter, they've raped his wife or whatever, and now he's out, and it immediately gives you emotionally invested.
What were the other two?
Shayla
and Joanna. Yeah.
So if it's all as you analyze, like, this is a pretty clear case of a woman being fridged. And yeah. I don't think it... So here's the thing. It's incredibly effective because everyone can put yourselves in that situation. Like, we've all had people we've loved. We've lost people. And you could put yourselves in shoes of, like, what you would feel like if you'd found out that someone had been murdered that you cared about, and now you're primed for revenge. And the only reason it's a problem is because throughout cinematic history... it's primarily been male protagonists whose women have been fridged. Like, if it was a 50-50 male-female, and, you know, and I think we see that more and more when you have female action heroes and females are taking the lead, as, like, their boyfriends and their husbands are getting fridged, too. But, yeah, like, if it's just to make Philip Price feel like he's... like redeeming him and making him into a protagonist you can root for, it is kind of shitty because she did have a lot more to offer the show than to just be the a man's, you know, extra emotional oomph he needs to do whatever he's needing to do.
I never felt like she was that during her story, right? Like, her storyline was very much her own in a lot of ways.
It was kind of her and Elliot's story. You lost your dad. I lost my mom through the same thing. We want, like...
And they were pursuing, you know, their remedies in different ways.
Yeah.
And sometimes those ways came together. Sometimes they didn't.
Elliot used his powers and abilities. She used her powers and abilities to, you know, to advance their both agendas. And
But here in the end, I did feel like she didn't have... She didn't have a way forward in this story. That, I guess I have to ask myself, okay, do I picture a season four in which Angela, you know, goes out there and does some detective work that, you know, somehow Elliot can't do, and cracks open the case of what's going on in the Congo, why this machine is so important, whether or not it's real. Do I buy that could happen? And I just don't see her being a powerful enough person in this world to get that done. And so where does that leave her?
Yeah. So I could see a person being upset, or like just upset, but just like kind of roll your eyes at, like, oh, this shit again. But
right.
There's also, it's entirely possible that there is still stuff coming down the pike. But, you know, it's also, I'm not going to pre-defend Esmail. It's like, that's something he wouldn't do because it's shit. It's
sure.
It's a trope for a reason. Just much like damsel in distress, all the kind of different ways women have been used in cinema for maybe not super great empowering reasons, he could certainly be the latest in a very long line of that. But we'll see. Last up, Melody H. A lot of people want to talk about Angela. Wonder why. I was shocked to see Angela murdered in the opening moments of Mr. Robot, but I feel like it's probably time for that character to exit the show in one way or another. Melody agrees with you, Jim.
Yeah.
I'm curious what you guys think about what this means for the remainder of the show. By the end, Angela had become unhinged, railing on about how White Rose was going to return her mother and Elliot's father. Her interactions with White Rose led to a lot of fun theorizing about what on earth White Rose had planned. Did all those theories die right alongside with Angela? As she was the only character who truly believed, is her death a signal from S-Mail that those theories should be put to rest? I hope not, as I'm a sucker for a good sci-fi, timey-wimey type plotline, but I'm curious as to your thoughts.
I don't think so, because clearly, like, we talked about the translation of this guy on the phone. Mm-hmm. There are other people who believe, as she did, right? So, yes, she's dead, and maybe that is S-Mail trying to put a stamp on it, but I don't think it's going to work.
So let's talk about this. I thought this would be a good springboard for our final kind of topic, which is a discussion of these, you know, Angela off by one theories. And I'm with you. I don't fully understand, but to my understanding, there was a point where Angela listed off a date. She said like Tuesday, October 21st.
Extremely early on in the show. First meeting with the guys from E-Corp at AllSafe.
And if you go back and look in 2015 and you look at that date, it was, and I'm just using for examples because these are not literal. These are just me, you know, trying to explain the concept. Is like if she said October 21st, which was a Tuesday, October 21st in 2015 is actually a Wednesday.
Right. She's off by one day.
Which is an incredibly common programming mistake to make. If you're ever like you're asking a computer to project a several months or weeks or something, it's very like what, you know. It's a nightmare for a computer to figure out because the days don't stay consistent from year to year. The months are all different lengths. And a lot of times you get in trouble like saying, what is a year from now? Is that a calendar year? Is that 365 days? Is that 52 weeks? And it's very easy to get these calculations to where you're a day off of where you should be.
There's another type of off by one error, which is basically everything in a computer. Well, this is why it's a problem, because many systems will index on zero, which means they start counting at zero and go up 1, 2, 3, 4 to 9.
Yeah.
But many systems also begin at 1 and go 1, 2, 3, 4 all the way to zero. So it becomes very confusing and very hard to keep straight. You have to consult documentation.
Yeah, a real life one is like our date system. If you go, like, you calculate how many years between, I don't know, 607 BCE and 1914 CE, you will be off by one because there's no zero year.
Right.
There was no one born in the year 0 AD or 0 BC. So there's stuff like that causes you to get tripped up when you're doing the math and the calculations of it. And there's been many, many instances of when this seems like deliberate, unlike the wine bottle 2017, where dates are listed and the day of the week is listed with it, and it's off by one. And there's like
over and over again.
Yeah, there's a half dozen or more of those examples. And it's always it's some of them aren't as prominent as like Angela speaking it. Sometimes it's just like emails on screen. But now, here's where it breaks down, because somehow this ties in with this Angela as a host theory.
This is the part I don't get, yeah.
That there's something artificial or constructed by the Angela, or you're supposed to understand that... Elliot is the host for Mr. Robot's consciousness, right? One of the Angela as a host theory is that we've actually gotten this wrong, and Angela is the host, and Elliot and Mr. Robot are both aspects of her.
Okay.
And there's this guy, particularly on Reddit, it could be a woman... or could be those who lie between. There's someone to get this theory, and they've done a lot of exhaustive research about all the opportunities where, like, you could make a case that Elliot is inside Angela. And there's a couple things that neatly explain it. Like, for example, Angela has fairly sophisticated hacking powers out of nowhere in season 3. And she even goes and saying, like, oh, I'm not sure. I don't know if I can do that. And she just goes in and crushes it.
Doesn't know what a femtocell is, but yet she can hack with the best of them.
Right. Now, maybe she picked up a little bit more from AllSafe, or maybe she got really well-schooled by Elliot, or maybe Elliot is a part of her core personality and she's made up all this shit. Obviously, Angela, the host, dying is a problem for this theory, And I didn't get a chance because my God, this show, I literally research up until Jim says it's time to start the mics. It's time to hit roll the cameras.
Yeah.
So I sat down to kind of read this person's ideas, what the late, how he's evolving the host theory. And I saw a comment on like the main show thread where he was going in about how this might not be the death of DeAngelo as a host theory, or it might evolve. But I didn't quite, because I honestly, I barely understood DeAngelo as a host theory because I remember dismissing it as kind of patent nonsense. Mm-hmm. So like, and you do that, you like, you know, anytime I'm doing like Westworld or True Detective, there's people have their pet theories. Some of them I think are interesting and I follow. Some of them I talk about the podcast and think it's crazy. So when I see it resurface, I'm like, oh, that shit again. So I don't know all the ins and outs. I just know that there's somehow this is connected with the one day being off and Angela as the actual host person, the actual host body for all these personalities. Do you have any missing pieces?
I have a question that maybe we can research for next week, or someone who is more familiar with this theory can write in and let us know, perhaps this person on Reddit even. How does that mesh with White Rose having seemingly met both Angela and Elliot? And not acting like they are the same person, right? Like when Philip says she was my daughter, she's still on board with trying to kill Elliot.
I think that it would be easy for White Rose to compartmentalize it, since that is what she herself does. You know,
okay,
White Rose,
but there's a physical body somewhere, yes?
Yeah, sure.
And if she has just shot that physical body in the head, why would she be concerned about Elliot?
Okay, that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't know how you evolve the theory beyond Angela getting her brains blown out.
Okay, maybe somebody who does, you know, has done the research and understands this can write in and explain that, because that's
possible?
A huge
here's the
problem
thing.
In my
we
opinion.
See okay, I mean, if I want to go full-blown Sam Esmail is a fucking lunatic asshole and I'm going to hate him at the end of the
all
season,
right, he's lying and it's time travel, interdimensional,
nope, not even
stuff
that.
Multiple hosts.
We didn't see Angela die. We saw her die in blurry background with Philip Price, the back turn, there's some red mist, maybe it was a paintball, and this is all like a, and then we saw like a half frame or two or three frames at 24 frames a second of her having a hole in her head.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? It looked like a Hollywood makeup job to me. Didn't look like someone with a hole in her head. Looked like someone had some fucking makeup put on.
The
maybe
hole was
even,
on the wrong side.
Maybe
that's,
some even digital
that blow
effects.
Went through the front.
So like,
yeah,
it's in it, the way it was framed and the way they're doing it. This like it's entirely possible that Angela's not dead. I don't think that's actually true. I'm just saying that I can't prove it with the evidence that we have before
and
us.
How could you
not prove it to by Reddit detective standards, for sure,
right? You never could, though.
So I think that would be stupid. I would much rather actually her be cloned or be in a robot body, or you know, I think that's one of the key one-off things too, is that Angela's artificial, she's an artificial construct, because like that's something computers do and people don't, like they get dates wrong.
People never get dates.
If you listen to the podcast, I just made a like face. You know, like, come on, bro, face.
Yeah.
So I don't know, but you know,
okay,
all will be revealed in the fullness of time.
We'll know in
I'm
the next 12 weeks.
Of. Yeah. And that's all the feedback we've got. You can send more in to robot@baldmove.com. We also have our forums, forums.baldmove.com, where we have weekly discussion threads for the episodes. If you'd like to get in and do some of your Angela as a time traveling Doctor Who host, Westworld, Dolores theory. I mean, have we ever thought that, like, you know, Darlene goes by Dolores Hayes, like Dolores Abernathy, like the robot from Westworld? I mean, come on,
Elliot
sheeple.
Always wears that cowboy hat.
There
you
go.
Know, like, come
Mr.
on,
Mr. Robot wore. He's wearing a scarf this episode. We've never seen Mr. Robot in a scarf. Mr. Robot doesn't wear. So what is this? Harry Potter?
Was this the Man in Black?
Did Snape kill Dumbledore? We're going to blow the lid off this whole fucking thing, episode by episode. We'll be back with next week's. And until then, I'm your host, Aaron,
and I'm Jim.
See ya.